microphone's in the Wave Farm pond in Zach Poff's pond station. The microphone outside in the woods at Wave Farm in the test site of acoustic.
Hi, this is Mark Ruffalo, and you're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Accra.
Wave Farm respectfully and humbly acknowledges the past, present, and future Indigenous peoples on whose ancestral lands Wave Farm and our radio station, WGXC, operate and broadcast. The Mohicans named themselves the people of the waters that are never still, following their arrival along the Mohicanituck, the Great Ebb Tide River, also known as the Hudson. The Mohicans stewarded this land over many generations in dynamic communication and interaction with diverse Indigenous peoples, including the Haudenosaunee Mohawk and the Munsee Lenape. Mohican descendants today live in communities in Ontario, Wisconsin, and Oklahoma. For further information on Mohican history and the contemporary community of the Stockbridge Munsee Band of Mohican Indians, please visit Mohican.com.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Crisafulli Brothers Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical, Upstate New York's home services company since 1993, Red Carpet Service and Solutions. For more information, visit CRISBRO.com.
Wave Farm's WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Overlooked in Kingston, New York. WGXC monthly supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
You don't know me. I'm not just one of your many toys. You don't know me. Don't say I can't go with other boys.
Good evening, and thank you for joining. I am Kimberly Y. Irwin, Master Intercultural Communicator, who can reach you and who is reaching you via WGXC 90.7 FM, a wavefarm.org enterprise. And as your host on Race Talks, I'd like to just say that was Leslie Gore singing You Don't Own Me, her 1963, I believe, song. I'm believing it's 1963. However, I wanted to start off with that because we are celebrating Women's History Month, and in that case, why not show how women can be strong, how they're no longer needing to look towards others, especially men in their lives, to have their own finances. And though we are still struggling as females, as women, to actually have pay equity in the workplace, we're still making it happen. We're still working together. And that's kind of what this show is about. And as usual, I'll say this show, Race Talks, is where we, every third Tuesday of the month from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m., have the very necessary conversation on race and ethnicity. And some people ask me, why talk about race? And I continue to say, it's simply to combat racism. Education is a key, and discussion a must. And now, let's get talking, because
no topic is taboo. No topic is taboo.
That's right. And you hear two people that I would love to introduce you to. Of course, you know Garrett Roche. He is the host of the podcast, The Roche Solid Truth, and is so graciously joining me today in the Hudson studio to serve as the production assistant. So I want to thank him ever so much. That's why we were able to have that musical intro today. And the other person is someone I'm going to interview. We're going to have a chat, a conversation with on air. That was Mina Raver. And who I see is coming on, who wasn't quite able to say those words. She's still here, though, and that's a returning guest talker. That's Dr. Kat, K-A-T. Let's see right now. Garrett, there is something that you wanted to say.
Absolutely, Kimberly. Thank you so much. Here's to Race Talks, where the conversations flow in the unity of voices. New understandings grow. The past and the present intertwined in grace, a symphony of stories in this memorable place.
Wow, Garrett, did you write that all by yourself?
No, not at all. I had a little assistance with someone who shared the poem with me.
Well, I think what he's trying to say is he's hinting that that was actually technology doing that poem. You put in Race Talks and lyrics and a little bit of what Race Talks is, and you can come up with something like that. And that was written by ChatGPT, correct?
Correct.
So we're going to talk to you a little bit about technology in our two topics of today, or I should say our main themes, equity in tech and invest in women. However, I am going to, we're having, it seems like, a little bit of a technical difficulty. So I will try to check that out by asking the production assistant to look into that while I just talked about the intro. Okay, so it's looking like we might need an adjustment. Can I see a show of hands? My two guests right now, they are calling in from on Zoom.
I cannot hear.
Oh, now I hear her saying, I cannot hear. Can you hear me? Still no. Well, one thing you can do is maybe jump out and jump back in. Can you do that? Maybe that'll work. Let's text. Let's text them. Oh, yes, Garrett's texting them right now, asking them to come out and jump back in, and then maybe they can be heard. But you know, Garrett, we just shared the YouTube video. Do you think that has something to do with it?
Perhaps. Who knows?
Okay, well, you're looking
YouTube,
into...
YouTube gremlins might be jealous.
Okay, so while we're getting them to do that, I'm going to go ahead and chat with you about our segment. Our first segment is, well, we have three segments today. We have the talk term, DYK, which is Do You Know, and Firsts, where we talk about a first that's happened in the nation. So... okay, it's looking like I'm going to have to do double duty here. I'm going to have to read and, okay. Okay, Mina's coming back in, right? Kimberly, Adam Tufts is here. Can you share with me by a sound that you can hear me, Dr. Katz? No, that's not happening. You know what we can... Okay. Okay, can you hear me now? Well, we're working it out. We're having our production assistant working it out. So we're going to go ahead. I hope the ladies are hearing me right now. Show of hands if you can hear me very well. Okay, so I see heads going up and down. So we're going to go ahead. I didn't really want to start this without you ladies because this might be something we can talk about on the roundtable. So I'm kicking off this first segment with the concept of ism. And I've changed it up a little bit. I thought to talk about feminism, or not to talk about it, but just to highlight what feminism is. Because when we talk about feminism, sometimes men get a little bit curious and feel like that's something where you're anti something. And feminism is not defined as anti any gender. Feminism, simply put, is all about having equal rights and opportunities. It's about respecting women's experiences, our identities, the knowledge and strength, kind of like what that song was about, and striving to empower all women to realize and utilize their full rights as human beings. And of course, I'm going to add with responsibilities. And I said I'm adding that because that definition came from International Women's Development Agency. Yes, there is something akin to that here. And there's another term I want to highlight because of our theme: feminist technology. Now, who even knew that you put those two words together and it means something specific? And what it means is coming from activist, writer, and researcher Jan Key and Sally Hack, two young feminists and co-founders for Gender Studies and Research. That's a discussion they have, but technically, we're not going to have that feminist technology discussion, but I just wanted to bring up the fact that there are terms that are utilized looking into women in tech today, and also the digital arena. There's also a woman called Carol Ndozi, who is from Tanzania, who's actually a digital rights feminist. So those are tech terms that if you have time, you can go and Google and look to it. I will have it on my website, KimberlyIrwin.me, and other items that we will talk about at the end so that you can contact and get in connections with both of our guests. So Mina, I want to introduce you first. You are a graduate of Indiana University School of Public Health. You're bringing innovation with Better CEO, which is a mobile productivity app designed for professionals dealing with ADHD. Your advocacy for intersectional equity, coupled with your expertise in kinesiology, neuroscience, and computer science, showcases your commitment to lifelong learning. And right before we were on air and before we had the gremlins where you couldn't hear me, well, I asked if we met on something called Kernel. And you mentioned that was true. But it was confusing because we did a lot of connections via LinkedIn. So there's so many ways, tons of ways we can connect today in tech. So if you'd like to share a little bit about yourself, why Race Talks is a good avenue for you to share a little bit about yourself on today, and maybe highlight how Kernel has helped you, and anything else. We're going to just have an open conversation after you get started with introducing what you would like our audiences to hear, to know about you.
Sure. Well, thank you so much for that introduction. I'm flattered, humbled, to say the least. It's easy to forget qualifying to the work that you're doing. I really appreciate that introduction. I am Nina. I'm building a company called Catalystium. That is a invasive neurotech company where we're building tools like assistive mobile apps for neurodivergent professionals, like those suffering from ADHD or autism spectrum disorder, in service to our mission of preserving cognitive diversity. I've been all over the place and I've seen a lot of people, and I found that and believe that cognitive diversity is just as important to our technological survival as biological diversity is to our ecological survival. And so I just want to see more technology come out with the perspective and the design to help people be more of themselves, not more capable of conforming to, frankly, systems and concepts of cognitive normalcy that don't serve anyone.
Okay. Well, I want to make sure that the audience was cognizant of what you started with. So I just want to make sure we're doing something right now. So can you hear me right now, Nina, again?
I can hear you. Yeah, okay. I can hear you great.
She can hear me great. Was that with the plug-in? Put the plug in and see if she can hear us with the plug-in. We're going to just do it. Can you hear me now?
No. Yes.
Oh, yes, you can. Okay, so it's wonderful.
Yes.
Both of you wave your hands if you can hear. Okay, yay. Yay. All right. And I just want to be able to see you. All right. We've got that done. So you mentioned one thing that I wanted to ask you about. You were talking about not the terminology, but having technology not take over, but be an aid, something to that effect.
Yes, absolutely. So for neurodivergent people, for cognitive diversity in general, a lot of the tools and technology that are coming forth to serve that demographic are geared toward making people more normal. And the normal in cognition is a concept that is born out of eugenics. It's born out of a time of ethnic, gender, and cultural and conceptual homogeneity. And I just really want to see more technology that is both non-invasive, meaning non-surgical, and preservational. I want to see people be more of themselves and bring that variance and diversity to problem solving and ideation and creation in ways that we haven't seen before. And we should be able to do that now with all of these technological conduits that can help kind of translate between people of different mindsets, backgrounds, languages, and hopefully also cognition and perception.
Well, yes. And I would tell my friends in a very funny way that there's an app for that. Whenever they say anything, I'm like, and there's an app for that. And so, Mina, you designed an app for just that, right? Better,
yes,
CEO,
exactly.
Better with all caps, CEO. Talk about that app and how you actually are not just talking the talk, but walking the walk with it.
Sure. Oh, that's fantastic. So I actually was diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder, ADHD, and synesthesia at 6 years old. I was at that point, I was still not quite fully verbal, but one day my elementary school teacher handed me a box of colored pencils and a math worksheet. And by the end of that year, I went from being in the disabled room to the gifted room simply with that being able to express myself mathematically in the colors that align with the way that I see equations. Since then, it has been a back and forth between trying to be able to get along in school. I dropped out in high school for various reasons, one of them being because I did not get the kind of support that I needed to learn the kinds of ways that I wanted to going through university and public health and really studying kinesiology, neuroscience, the mind-body connection on a very deep level, to today, running a business and a homestead and homeschooling three kids, having to keep track of everything and coaching the other 30% of small business owners who also struggle with ADHD. I went from coaching on that and building a bunch of analog tools to kind of consolidating those tools into my first app, which is Better CEO, like you said. Thank you so much. And it is assistive. It is an AI-enabled productivity coach that helps people with ADHD, instead of being better with your time, start learning, building time relevance. Instead of being better with your tasks, start putting everything into one space and getting help prioritizing.
Well, thank you. And I didn't know that about your bringing your upstart, like the reasons for your decision to create that type of application software. So it came from, most people say, if you want to read something and it's not there, write a book. You know, so it's, if you need something to help you with something, now it's write an app or create an app. But you mentioned something, and which is really key to what entrepreneurs are doing right now. You're working from home mainly, and you were working with your three young children, you mentioned. So I will use the term. I know some people don't like it, but it's there. So it's relevant for some, mompreneur. And because of this, the part that makes you an entrepreneur and not just the mom is that you need financing, right? You need to earn and get funding for your idea. So it's not just creating an idea, ideation that you mentioned. It's actually then putting it to some kind of paper or online tool so that you could then see it into reality. So can you just share a little bit about how that worked with you? And I'm going to ask that Dr. Kat listens in too. She's already shaking her head in agreement and understanding with you. So I'm going to bring her in quickly after you mention this, after you add this, because we're going to have a really great roundtable to discuss this. So yes, share with
me. Sure.
Okay. Yes.
That's a good thing to think about. So I actually started with marketing, running a marketing agency about 10 years ago is how I got into entrepreneurship. I met lots and lots and lots of other moms, mompreneurs, who all had children, ADHD, and a desire to bring something amazing into the world. And that's how I started coaching for people with ADHD. Last year is when I decided that, hey, I can help a lot more people if I can learn computer science and turn these tools into something repeatable. And so I put it on paper and I started looking for financing, and I was watching other people get financed for very similar ideas and not myself. So I started, you know, I built the first version of the app and started selling it locally to a community, right? Not locally, it's international, but within a community and having the community starting to build it up. And so then with some social proof that, hey, people are willing to pay for this, people are willing to pay for the coaching, they're willing to pay for this entire business idea, I took that out for financing and was rejected over and over. So I'm currently at 72 rejections for funding. I've seen the two other men who started about a year ago, the same time I did, both got funded and are both now out of business. I took my app to market before them. I am still in the game. And now with these new, the multimodal Gemini announcement, I will be able to cut back my development from 18 months to about 2. So watch me go. I've had to fund this through private coaching, privately coaching individuals through my community, and by just really building a community around me who believes in cognitive diversity. Because frankly, as a, you know, I'll just go out there and say it, nothing's taboo, right? I'm a hood rat. I've got that hood rat innovation. I've still got those edges. I won't let them go. Like, right? But I'm not seen as a scientist. If I go, I get into these funding meetings and they're expecting me to pitch makeup, which please, I mean, you can see I like makeup. They're expecting me to pitch makeup, and I'm talking about, you know, I'm talking about changing people's lives and building external conduits for human brains so we don't have to change who people are. Mm. And they like it. They're interested. I still get dozens of emails every day from people going, you know, let me set up a time with you. But at the end of the day, I am not seen as a scientist. I'm not respected as a scientist. And it has absolutely impacted my ability to get funded. And that's not me being, you know, upset. That is the statistic. In the last year, I have personally known someone who gave up his life because he could not get funding for his company. It's been a hard year for everybody for fundraising.
Wow.
And so that 0.3% that usually goes to Black and Latino women at Series A and B, there's not a whole lot left for pre-seed and seed, because that's what we're competing for, is among ourselves about 0.3% of total funding going into entrepreneurship.
And that's also a problem because they put you in a box. And so you only have that box within which to partake of what you need, when it's not a pie. You know, it should be a pie that can grow as the wealth of business entrepreneurs grow with their ideas. But I'm going to bring in Dr. Katz now, because like I said, we're going to have this really great roundtable discussion, but only if we have time at the end. And I'm going to make sure we do, even if we don't do some of our own segments, because she can share a lot of light on just the reasons why we have problems in pay equity. Because it's not, well, let me just talk to you about her. Okay. I'm championing women and their success. We have Dr. Kat. She's an expert in academia, focusing on the challenges women face in securing tenure, achieving promotion, and establishing pay equity. Her leadership roles range from program coordinator to associate dean. Her extensive experience offers invaluable insights into creating a space for women in the workforce and entrepreneurship. I say that because she's tackled me, and thankfully, I've been listening and doing pretty well under that tutelage. I'd like to bring her on because she's unleashing today great insights of pay equity, and by her role as a certified life coach, she shares insights in the challenges in other areas, like in tech. So welcome, Dr. Kat, Kimberly Adams Tufts.
Hey, first I want to say thank you for inviting me and having me here. And after listening to Mina, I want to say how fabulous it is to be in a world where we have women innovators who are leading the way for inclusion in technology. And yes, we got that 0.3%, and that's a sorry number, if I should say so myself. Yet at the same time, my experience being a woman of color in the academic environment and university life, and seeing what happened to women in general, women, majority women, women who are ethnic minorities, just being a woman. If you decide today you're going to decide to declare that you're a woman, you're going to have a different experience in academic life. And I would say that I could say to you, Mina, you could sell anything. Yes, you could promote makeup if you wanted to, but that's not what you're wanting to do. And so they need to stand up or sit up and listen, you know?
Yes. Yes.
Me having that experience, but now in my role as a coach for women, I have coached men, but I primarily focus on women. My mission, my aim is to empower women to, yes, get promoted if that's what they like, get promoted, land new opportunities, whether that's in the academic space or in solopreneurship, and navigate those transitions. But here's the important piece. Without sacrificing their personal relationships, their health, and their wealth. You don't have to give up everything in order to make it. But which in the environments, most of them, we're taught that, you know, so you're competing with the other 0.3% of women and women of color who they're going to provide some capital to. And so it may make us think, well, I've got to be at it day and night, because at some point I'm going to surface and they're going to see my ideal and see the value of it. And that's true. We have to strive. We have to keep working. But what I've discovered in the last few months, you know, there's a lot of fear being thrown about. I've heard that 2024 is the year of AI. Mm-hmm. And yes. People really began to start to talk about AI in 2023. There's a lot of myths. There's a lot of fear. And, you know, AI is this new thing. And I started thinking, no, is that true? You know, when you're on your phone and it auto-populates a word that you don't want, that's AI. And that's been happening for years.
Yes.
And then I could think of all sort of things where we've been using AI in several forms for quite a few years now. But for some reason in 2023, toward the second half of it, it got to be a point of conversation and all these myths and all this fear. Oh, it's going to take your job. Oh, you better do this so it won't take your job. Oh, if you use it to help you write scholarly papers, you're cheating.
Yes.
And all of these things. And so I thought, I kind of love technology. And I don't really know why I haven't built a career based solely on technology.
For You're like starting
the
last now.
5 years, I've been saying, I just love, from the point when about 25 years ago, I think, a guy said to me who was in IT, he came over to a community-based healthcare center that I was leading. And it was about accessibility to quality primary healthcare services for people, the elderly, people who lived in inner urban communities, mothers and babies, and in my direct surround, Hungarian immigrants.
Mm.
And he came over from the university and he was going to help me something with my computer. It's about 25 years ago. And he said to me, oh, Kimberly, Kat, your mousing could use some work. Well, they don't ever throw the gauntlet down at me. So he was saying I couldn't even use a mouse properly. From that day on, I decided that I would learn this stuff and I'd be good at it. And my superpower is curiosity.
Ah.
So when I heard all of this fear mongering from the authorities and amongst ourselves, I said, I got to do something about this. So I decided that I'm going to learn different things about new generative AI. Most of the stuff we're talking about is generative AI.
Yes.
And as I learn things about generative AI, I'm just going to share them with other people and try to create a sense of wonder and fun around it. Well, that was a great thing to set out to do. I'll tell you both, Mina and Kimberly, great thing to do, right?
Right.
Yeah. I learned some little lessons when I decided to go out there and learn AI. Like, I've been following a couple of guys, men mostly, at the beginning,
right,
and learning at their feet via social media and emails and stuff about prompting and how important it is to give the proper prompt and develop your prompts, all of that stuff. So somebody said, you know, you could create a caricature of yourself. And I thought, well, that sounds kind of fun. So I got the prompt. And yes, Mina's rolling her eyes. So I got the prompt about, and I think I asked one of the guys, you know, like, what's the prompt that you use? And they gave me a prompt that they had used. These were all men and they were not men of color. And they said, here's a prompt, Kat, use this prompt. So the first step was to upload a picture of yourself. Oh, I did that. I uploaded a picture of myself. And then I used the prompt. Create a 3D illusion or illustration of an animated character sitting casually on top of a social media logo, LinkedIn,
okay,
quote unquote, based on this picture. Now, the picture that it was based on, remember, I uploaded a picture of myself. The next part of the prompt was the background of the image should be a social media profile page with a username, Kimberly Adams Tufts, and a profile picture that matches the animated character. Use the picture I uploaded, to create an image. What do you think that generative AI produced for me?
Oh, I can only imagine. I'm going to stop you there only to bring in for those listeners who may not be so understanding of what you're saying. When you do a prompt, you're like putting in information that you would like the AI to understand and then spit out in some other format. And so you're sharing what
generate
format.
Something new. Right. Yes. Kimberly, it's like, you know, remember the old DOS days where we had the DOS prompt? Do you remember when we first started using PCs and computers? You don't remember? It used to be a screen that flashed at
that
you.
That green light.
There was a colon and some backslashes.
Right.
It was called the DOS prompt.
Right.
And right there, you had to put like a little code or a prompt, a command.
A command.
You had to put in the command. And it used to say the word, I'm looking at my keyboard. Does it still say command? No.
Yeah,
but it was a command prompt. And so that's where this prompt language is coming. So now in the field of, in the age of generative AI, we put a command prompt or a text-based command that we're giving the computer, the program, the software, to create something for us. So that's what a prompt is. It's a text-based command that we're giving to the software to generate something new for us.
Well, what you were saying is, the question you had asked, though, was what did it come up with? What did it provide you with? And I know that when I put in something because I wanted a figure and I said I want a black woman in an office outfit, an office suit, you know, business suit, a business attire, and a briefcase. And I mean, the black woman was bustier. I mean, she was like looking fabulous. Well, I don't know. She was looking good, but like she was in a Jay-Z video, you know, like with Baby Got Back. And her business suit was all leather. And like I said, showing a lot of cleavage. And I was like, what did I not say correctly? Because that's what they thought of black women. That was the first idea of black women, you know, a booty call kind of thing. But go ahead. What did yours come up looking like?
Okay. And I love that one. I love that one. Because in this whole first exercise with trying to create the character, it's what the software, the models that they're trained on. Mm-hmm. See, they're trained on certain models, right, and the models fit a certain mold. And so when I gave it a picture of me and I gave it this beautiful prompt that the guys had given me, it generated a white male with blue eyes from my picture sitting up on a LinkedIn logo. That was the first, right? So I ended up in that exercise doing 9 prompts, and exactly what you said, Kimberly, exactly what you said. So the second prompt, I try to give it a little more information. And they create a woman, the second prompt, because I say it has to be a woman, blah, blah, blah. But the woman is still a white woman.
Wow.
Even though it has to be. The third prompt, and this is where it gets interesting to like what you said. When I tell it to make the character an African-American, it only is trained on certain skin tones. Mm. Remember, it has my picture. It can't do that with my... Took 9 prompts. Also, when I said... So I ended up in this exercise. I told my audience, what was the lesson I learned? That AI, the general lesson is that it has a default gender, it has a default race, and it has default skin tones. So I get it to create a different skin tone, but I notice when you use the word African, it thinks it's only one type of skin tone. Then I said, and it also has a body type that it was modeled on. So I'm a little, you know, you talked about the busty. I'm a little busty. and I'm not the thinnest girl. So I said, make her slightly heavier. You know what that it meant? Have some boobs overflowing. Okay?
Yes.
Overflowing boobs.
Well, that's exactly what I experienced. And
the
what
booty
they,
call look.
Right.
The and booty what, call look is what it came up with.
And
absolutely.
So it's like with, you know, healthcare and everything else, we're secondary, tertiary, not even thought of. And so with those prompts that you're suggesting, you also have to then put in what you don't want. And so you can't just add what you want. You have to add what you absolutely don't want to find out, you know, to come up with something akin to what your response you're looking for. And that's the crux. I want to ask you, I mean, you can finish what you were saying, but I want to also have you mention a little bit about your recent work with a virtual assistant. Because, you know, part of the conversation is how do we allow for women getting better pay? And
yes,
a lot
yes.
of people are going online. A lot of people are doing, you know, their side jobs and side hustles. So could you share a little bit about that? Again, you can finish what you were saying,
but
I want you to add that.
The whole pay equity issue, right? The whole pay equity issue. And to what you just said, even when you say what you don't want, so when I finally got the one that was closest to looking like me, it still had blue eyes. And so I went out and asked some of the experts and they said, yes, this is why. And it's still because of how the model is trained. Mm. Okay.
So it's not yet for us there.
Right. However, there's hope. I've got some resources from you. There's some women who are doing some real work in this area.
And we'll talk about that.
I featured somebody because there are women who are doing some great work in this area. But the pay equity is truly an issue. So get lots of inquiries about, do you need a virtual assistant? And so finally, I contracted with this woman because we met, and she happens to be in Sri Lanka. The reason I contracted with her, because of the mission behind her business. She told me her mission was to help women who had married or married and working from home or working in the home to continue to have a level of income, but also, as importantly, women who happen to be single parents. She wanted them to be able to have a livable wage. That's the word I'm looking for. And so we talked about it, and I said, I have to go with you, and I don't know how many people have contacted me, but I want to be with you because of your mission of paying women as equitably as you can in the context of your country, which is a problem, mm-hmm. and helping. Your mission is to help women collectively to raise ourselves up. So that's why I went with that. But at the same time, I knew I didn't need that much help. But I chose the middle package so that the person who works with me would get paid more. And also, we've only a few weeks or a month into this arrangement, I don't stress about the how much work. Oh, I must make sure she gets 10 hours in or 20 hours in. That's my way of contributing to pay equity, because though she would be paid more if she lived in Western Europe and the United States and some places in Asia, but in the context of her country, they're only going to allow, because it's competing. If the person who's contracted with me begins to pay the women even higher, that doesn't bode well in her country. So it's still the day of, even in 2024, in Women's History Month, we still have to think about manipulating and strategizing to create a circumstance so that women can be paid somewhat equitably. Right?
Yes. And I think one of the reasons, and you kind of made a mention of it, there's people who converse about what that pay scale looks like. And I always say, you know, I'm an advocate for myself, and I look at young people when I work with them, and they need to speak up and be advocates for themselves. So sometimes my background, my circumstances, and quite frankly, what I need, or more importantly, what I desire for myself, might not look the way this particular pay scale looks, and I will seek outside, or, you know, seek something else. And that's why we find a lot of people going into entrepreneurship, because they're finding that there's a ceiling for them, and they can create the same kind of output with a higher pay on their own through the technology that's available now. And I've been actually contacted by an overseas vendor of virtual assistants, like a virtual assistant agency, and it was a man. So even then, and it's in the Philippines, even then, the people who own these virtual assistant agencies tend to be male, and they have in their house women, and of course their scale of pay is going to be much higher than those underneath them. So yeah, and it's hard to know, but yeah, I love the idea that, you know, as a woman, we're seeking to help other women, and not at the displacement of men, but again, it's been talked about, diagrammed, and decided upon that if you raise the women, the output of women, the lifestyle of women in your country, you're raising the entire nation. Because we are the ones who are having the kids, raising the children, and in many instances, doing both. Pretty much kind of like Nina just shared with us, how she was in the home educating. I guess you were feeding them, cooking a little bit for them, right? Maybe cleaning up a little bit. And even if you do have help, as a wonderful gentleman, a husband, a father, a father figure, or whomever, it's still, the weight is still on you as a woman. As the head of the family,
in a sense. So that brings us to, and I'm going to let you also have an opportunity to share more during the roundtable, but I wanted to bring in our next segment. And it's something that's different than talking about tech, but in a way, talking about film and industry is technology, right? I mean, we went from different types of industries based on the technological advancements of the times. I mean, we had radio, then we have visuals, and then we had something called Nickelodeon, which I didn't know. When I heard the word the term Nickelodeon, I really thought it was just, you know, the children's TV channel. And then I did some, I'm taking this course, actually. It's a University of Pennsylvania course on film and entertainment. And we were looking at the Oscars, and in the book of the instructor, he shares that the history of how film came to be about. And so we had moving films, or movies as we call them, and they only came about due to a certain type of technology that was invented. And, you know, and then around technology came the interest of people in seeing this further. So I bring that backdrop because we have a first, a Native American woman to be nominated for an Academy Award, which is an Oscars. And that's a very interesting idea that even today, 2024. Yeah. I want to find more information about her here. I actually didn't know if I'm going to get to this, and I just wanted to make it. Her name is Lily. Well, she's a Native American woman, and I just want to bring
Gladstone.
Lily Gladstone, and she is 37 years of age, and it took this long for her to be considered for an Oscar. And I want to read a little bit more of what she was nominated for. Best Actress for her role in Killers of the Flower Moon, which I haven't seen yet, but I'm going to because of that too. And there was a song, the Best Original Song, which was nominated. And this was the first from a Native American man. So we have both Native American woman and man to be nominated for Best Original Song and Best Actress. And I don't know, I didn't put the year, but I remember being very ecstatic when the first African American woman won in the Best Actress category, because before then it was the supporting actress and something like that. And there's still such flack for Halle Berry because they're saying what type of role she was, she won the award for. And it's not often that you win an award for the best movie you make, because it's all politics, right? So, and like everything, politics is the people. So it's we the people that makes these decisions. And we say they're systems, but people are in the system. So what I would like for us to do in our roundtable time is to have a conversation. So it's not me asking questions, but I mean, I saw that Mina was shaking her head up and down. And when Dr. Kat was talking, and Dr. Kat was like, yeah, saying, yeah, I get it. When Mina was talking, and you both cross-referenced each other. So, and I'm cross-referencing you all the time, both. So let's have a conversation about whatever just came up. So anyone at any time, just jump in and share what they would like to. We have about, how much time do we have left?
We have 7:48. So that means 12 minutes.
Well, 12 minutes to finish, but we want to end on this wonderful song. So we're going to give ourselves about 8 minutes to have a conversation. Go.
Awesome. Well, I think we could catch everything in talking about social separation, right? If we're talking about feminism, if we're talking about ethnic equity, whatever we're talking about, I have the extraordinary fortune of having an amazing husband. I mean, this man has waded into lion's dens to learn more about me, my experience, to like, he is constantly trying to be a better man. And I've watched him have to fight, like, social structures to be a father, to stay home with me when I had our children, to take time off to come to my graduation. Like, that's when I started wondering and thinking about these social hierarchies. And how do we encourage and support men as they divest from patriarchy?
Yes.
From the psychological isolation that is inflicted on them, keeping them from being friends to the wives that love them or the partners that love them, from being nurturing fathers, taking weeks off to skin hold their babies because their brains and their hormones change identically to the child bearers when they are home with their babies in the first weeks. It is vital to them and to their health. So when we're talking about any of these isms and we're talking about breaking down or building equity, we have got to be speaking just as much about social emotional equity for those who are economically empowered and robbed of these life experiences in exchange for that, as we are for the people who are economically robbed and fed on social and frankly, most of our bonding is trauma bonding.
Yes.
As women, as minorities, most of our bonding and our communities are based around our trauma, around being part of these systems. And like, on the same note, I don't care about the Oscars at all, but Lily Gladstone should have got it, and it's because I'm surrounded by the fiercest, most badass indigenous activists.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
I live in South Dakota. I'm surrounded by the
activists.
Oh, my God. Right.
And the way that they responded to her nomination, I was like, it was a glimpse into a brighter future, seeing the fire that was lit among these people when she was nominated. I'm like, we unleash that. And I don't want to get into conspiracies, but I would not be surprised.
No topic
that
is taboo.
Oh, the Blackfoot.
She didn't get it, because they were lit. I haven't seen them that lit since Standing Rock. Yes, I was there too.
Okay, well, you're coming back on.
equity is equity. Bringing us closer together, that's how we build equity. What is one group trading for their privilege? And, you know, what is one group getting for their continuation or their submission to a status quo? If we can break those down and bring people closer together, I think equity will happen by itself.
I just want to jump in. I just jump in real quick? Because, Mina, you said something that a friend of mine was just talking about, and it's the bonding over trauma. And I was saying that I felt...
Trauma bonding.
Yes. As an African-American woman, I was in Europe, and I saw in Paris, it was, God, over 10, 15 years ago, and I saw a girl who kind of looked like me. She looked like she could be my cousin physically. So I was standing in line, and I didn't want her to go way to the end of the line, which would have been like 100, and I'm not joking, 100 people behind me. So I kind of like waved to her, and she came in wondering what I was talking about. But as she got closer and I started talking to her in English, we're in France, in Paris, and I'm talking to her in English initially. And then I thought, oh, she's not understanding me. Could she be Parisian? Okay. Well, I started speaking in my broken French at the time. and she still didn't seem to understand me. And I'm like, And then as she got closer, we found out she was not an English speaker. She was Swiss German, and she was speaking German. Since then, I've learned German, but at the time I didn't. So we tried our best to figure it out. And either way, she stood with me in the line until we got in, and we went our separate parts. But I felt, because of the trauma that Black people have in America, that I can go anywhere in the world and feel that same camaraderie with another person that looked like me. And not always... That's not always true, but that's what we're going to give up when we get to the mountaintop. We're going to give away that trauma bonding so that we can bond over, you know, more cultural and consciously considerate understanding amongst ourselves. Okay,
desire. We have desire. We have vision. We have so many things to bond around that we never
coalesce around, right? To coalesce around. But I'm going to take that, Mina. I never thought about trauma bonding, but I'm going to take that from you with your permission, and put that out there and provoke a discussion about it. Something you said, though, and this is how I'm going to capsulize that and summarize what you were talking about, your experience with your husband and becoming new parents and child rearing and bonding. He's not babysitting. He's taking care of his children. Okay, that's so we as women, we can all hear that and understand that. Oh, isn't it lovely, Kimberly? Your husband is babysitting the children. Oh, no, he's taking care of his children. When I do them, I'm not babysitting. So, and that's kind of capsulizing that. And then on the Lily Gladstone issue. So, yes, she didn't win. She won almost everything else, the Golden Globes and everything else, right up to the Oscars. And I was coming from California 2 weeks ago, and at the last minute, I decided to watch that film. And it's 3 hours or something, and I only got to watch an hour. But I'm telling you, you must see it, and I must finish it. But thinking about that, that how many hundreds of years? And how, well, let's give the film industry, let's just give it 125 years. I'll just say that, okay?
Oh, I'm going to say that was our ring, so let's give you a minute to finish that thought.
So, you know, and to think that this is the achievement. It took this long to get this recognition. And she did not play a stereotypic Native woman. And we could take that stereotype and we could put it on all kinds of people. There's a prototype. There's a better word for it, an archetype that people of a different culture or ethnicity are supposed to play. She didn't play it, and she did it so darn well. And so we could talk about that. But I love what Mina said, and I want to end on that, that you said that what do the parties who have the economic privilege have to give up and trade off in order to have that? And what do we who have the other privileges of being in space with our families and children, why do we have to give up the economic benefits, right? So, and that if we could come together and both realize that there's trauma on both sides, what a world it could be.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you both, Dr. Katz and Mina Raver. We can all help each other globally. And I just want to end our entire show. Unfortunately, it's coming to an end. And I just want to end on a woman. Her name is Mabel Mercer. We're going to give an outro of her. She is in the book, Women's History in the Hudson Valley, 10 Stories from Columbia and Dutchess Counties in 2024, which are assembly member of the New York State Assembly for the 106th District, has put together, and she has listed 10 women. This woman is from Chatham. She is from 1900 to 1984. She was born of a white mother in Staffordshire, England, and her African-American musician father, who died, unfortunately, before she was born. And so she, unfortunately, only was able to grow up with one parent. But in doing so, she was able to have the gift of voice. And she won. She was the only person from Columbia County, which is where our studio is in Hudson, to have received the Presidential Medal of Freedom, the highest award given to civilians. And she was given this by President Ronald Reagan, who had said, "Mabel Mercer is a legend if there ever was one, a singer, a living testament of the artfulness of the American song." At her funeral, her honorary pallbearers were Tony Bennett, Sammy Davis Jr., Johnny Mathis, and Frank Sinatra, who said of Mabel, "She's the finest music teacher in the world, and she taught me everything I know." I think we should definitely end this with her. It's the lovely. But before so, I want to just give both of you one opportunity to share one in 30 seconds. How can someone reach out to you? Mina?
You can Google me. I'm absolutely everywhere. Google Mina Raver and catch me on social media.
Awesome. And Dr. Kat?
Same here. I'm ever present on LinkedIn. And you can also email me, Kat, Kat, wellness2@gmail.com. But you can find me on a couple of platforms for social media.
Wonderful. Thank you. From Kimberly Y. Irwin, your host of Race Talks, Love, Beauty, Joy. You the Lovely by Mabel Mercer.
Is long, the skies are clear. If you want to go walking, dear, it's delightful, it's delicious, it's delightful.